Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the NBC Sports Edge Circling the Bases podcast. I'm your host, Matt Williams, M-E-T-T-W-I-7-7-I-M-S on Twitter. And joining me for the weekend recap, he is the man of many talents, the host of The Sleeper in the Bust, the co-host of Sleeper in the Bust, co-owner of Friends with Fantasy Benefits and the Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast, founder and owner, creator of TGFBI, and of course, first and foremost, supermodel over at RotoWear, Mr. Justin Mason. What is up, Justin?
Hey, I'm doing fantastic, man. How are you? The man of many talents is something that no one has ever said to me.
You're like the Leonardo da Vinci of fantasy.
Oh, wow. That is something, right? That's definitely nothing or not something I've ever said about myself. So appreciate the kind words.
Yeah. Whether you want to or not, you have your hand in many bowls that a lot of other people don't. So you're kind of everywhere in a fantastic way. So you'll be joining me for the weekend, the glorious weekend recap over here at NBC. And of course, there's no other player than we could possibly kick off the show with that is more exciting than Adrian Hauser. We're going to start with the Milwaukee sinker baller, who threw, I think, his first career complete game, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep, it is.
Three hits, obviously zero earned, complete game, shutout, seven Ks versus the Cardinals, 40% CSW. So, I mean, it wasn't like a fluke. He didn't, like, get through it with nothing but, like, weak contact. 100 pitches on the dot, 76 strikes. So, what are your thoughts on Adrian Hauser a lot? I know he's, like, kind of a popular boring player in fantasy as someone you throw out there for a safe streamer, but 3.41 ERA this year. Do you think there's any more intrigue? Cause you got players like Max Fried, Zach Wheeler, Sandy Alcantara moving it back where sinker ballers are finding ways to become more valuable in fantasy, but obviously Hauser far removed from them as far as strikeout potential. He did okay in this one with seven, but do you think there's anything more in the tank for Adrian Hauser, or do you think this is kind of as good as it gets?
I've always felt like there was more in the tank. Just watching him pitch, you look at his stuff and you go, I think he could get some more strikeouts. But, I mean, he just gives up so much contact by design. He's trying to get out of innings quickly, a lot of ground balls, that I just don't know that it's ever really going to come to fruition. My question is, like, where has this been all season, man? We've been getting these like three inning outings and two and a third and four and a third. Like, and then all of a sudden we get nine. Like, I love it. I mean, it's great, especially for like my best ball teams, but he was sitting on my bench of most of my other teams where I had him. So he's a little bit frustrating. I'd love to see the Brewers give him a little bit more rope. Kind of consistently. I just don't know that we're going to get that. I don't think that's the way they look at him. I don't think that's going to change coming into the future either. I think this is kind of who he's going to be, is a guy who bounces between the rotation and being a long man, and kind of they pick their spots with him. When he rolls, but he's also going to have those times where, hey, you're only going out there for three innings tonight. And that's going to be frustrating in fantasy in general. So I wouldn't bank on him like turning into some sort of star.
I'm with you. I always thought that there might have been something there. I mean, I brought up Zach Wheeler, who's obviously on a different level, but in terms of Wheeler tapped into his sinker ball and to be successful at that level, like Luis Castillo, we were hoping to see, you know, you still have to have an out pitch, which he doesn't really have. So you see this kind of outing, you're like, okay, we see how you did this. Can we see any more of it? So I think he'll be someone that'll probably continue to be intriguing next year. If he could somehow unlock this thing where he can just go deeper into games, you know, he would be at least a valuable mid-round option in fantasy. But moving on to Jose Suarez, who was, I guess, one of my favorite pickups last week just to stream because he was going against the lovely Texas Rangers and their juggernaut lineup. Another complete game where these just came out of the woodwork this weekend. Five hits, one earned, eight strikeouts in this one. Career high, eight strikeouts, by far the longest Jose Suarez has gone in the game. Basically, he did this just by pounding the zone, which for a man of his talents either will work like we just saw, complete game, eight strikeouts, or of course you can get crushed. So going forward, he's got Houston on the road next week. What are you banking on? Jose Suarez being a little closer to this, or is this like a complete mirage here against the Texas Rangers?
I mean, he threw more innings in this game than he had in his previous two outings combined. So like, I'm not banking on this at all. Suarez is a guy I like. And I think if there was a spot in the rotation for him, full time next year, he might be a guy that might be kind of late on my sleeper list and stuff like that in my really deep leagues. But I'm not banking anybody against Houston. And Houston's got too good of a lineup to kind of run out a guy like Suarez, who's got talent in that arm, but it's been inconsistent. I mean, he's had outings where he's walked three, walked four, like, or hasn't been able to go much longer than like three or four innings. So I just don't know that he's reliable enough that you want to be rolling him out against a team like Houston.
I think, I mean, I agree with you, obviously, but I think it's important to bring up on the show because there'll be a lot of people that'll be hard pressed to sit a guy who just gave him a complete game with eight strikeouts, especially the way innings and wins and everything like that has gone in fantasy. I speak of someone who started Zach Davies out of necessity this week in a two-star week. Thank you for getting blown up by Pittsburgh, by the way, because I was hunting wins and that turned out to be horrible, as you know, as expected. But yeah, it might be difficult for some people to sit, but sometimes you got to make the hard decision. And Suarez, at, you know, on the road versus Houston, it's probably not going to go the way you hope it will, everybody.
No, streaming though, like, let's just real quick, like, yeah, when you're streaming, when you're hunting wins, you hunt him against bad teams, right? Don't hunt him against teams like Houston, right?
Yes.
You hunted Suarez against Texas. Don't try to push your luck. The Davies call was like that. Just, it's a good process.
Calculated risk that went awry.
It was a good process, bad result. You look for those opportunities against bad teams. Don't look for them against good teams.
Shohei Ohtani. This actually wasn't that standout of a performance for him for his standards, but still really good. Seven innings, two runs, seven hits, eight strikeouts versus, again, the Rangers. I basically just wanted to bring him up. I mean, he's closing in on 45 home runs. Is this like the – I mean, is this – everyone's talked about this whole year. Is this the best season ever? Because I know Babe Ruth, everyone wants to say either he's your unanimous best player of all time or there's a lot of people that don't want to give him credit because of his era. But, I mean, Shohei Ohtani's doing this now. And you know, he's going to be among the best pitchers in all the American League and probably, he would have been possibly an MVP candidate regardless of him pitching. But again, going into 45 home runs, it's crazy. I mean, it's like Steve Nebraska, if anyone's ever seen The Scout.
Yeah. That's an underrated movie, honestly. Brendan Fraser. I mean, I love that movie actually. But is it the best season ever? I have a hard time saying yes, only because Babe Ruth hit more home runs than multiple teams, like, mm-hmm. in a season. Like that, I know people are going to be like, well, Babe Ruth played against, you know, guys who couldn't even throw 85 miles an hour. Yeah, but that's the competition he had. Like, I mean, I'm sorry, like, you don't get to compare him against guys to today. Like, that's who we got to play against. Like, so, like, that's who we compare. It's the best season in like any sort of modern era, right? I mean, the best season in 100 years or some pretty damn close to that. So it's unbelievable what Ohtani has done. And like from a fantasy like lens of it, like in daily moves formats where you can use him everywhere, like he's easily the best fantasy player, or this is definitely the best fantasy season in the existence of fantasy, right? Like, and you got him outside of the top 200 picks in a lot of leagues, which is insane. Like, I mean, just he's single-handedly carrying fantasy teams to playoffs or to championships in a way that I wish he could do that with the Angels so we could see him and Mike Trout in the postseason.
Well, let's just say because of, you know, he came over pitching so many innings in Japan. Right now he has 112 innings, 135 strikeouts, but he's doing that with a 2.97 ERA and a 1.07 whip. If you were going to get those kind of limited innings, let's just bump it up to 140, 150 for the sake of argument. Just saying that he, you know, just had a full healthy season. How early would you take a person like that was going to give you those kind of innings? Let's just say he was just a pitcher. Where would you value him maybe going into next year? Just a pitcher.
I mean, I think he's a top 30 pitcher.
I agree. Where would you put him as a hitter? Because I mean, on top of the 43 home runs, he also has 23 stolen bases.
I mean, I think he's the number one hitter in fantasy. Like I think people are going to make the argument he's not, but especially on a daily moves format where you can replace him when he's sitting or when he's pitching. Mm-hmm. I think he's the number one player in fantasy, like number one hitter, top 30, probably even, I think you can make the argument he's like a close to being a top 10 to 15 pitcher. Because remember those years where Kershaw like was only throwing 140 innings, but there were an amazing 140 innings. That's kind of what he's doing right now.
Yeah.
You know, I think you can make the argument for Tatis over him as just a hitter, or Vlad over him as just a hitter, or Trey Turner. But like 40-20 in this day and age, like, is ridiculous. And I don't care that he's DH only in most leagues, or pretty much all leagues, right?
I'm interested to see how much people want to ding him for that, because you know they will. Someone will. But yeah, I don't know how far you can possibly. I mean, he can't. I mean, he's easily a first rounder. I don't see how anyone could argue otherwise.
Yeah, I mean, even in Yahoo, where he's only eligible at either pitcher or DH, like it was the two Ohtanis. Mm-hmm. Like, you've got to take hitter Ohtani in the first round. Like, I don't understand how you cannot.
It's unbelievable. Moving on to one superstar, to Rich Hill. 6 innings, 3 hits, 0 earned, 4 Ks versus Washington. Nothing spectacular, but I wanted to bring him up because he's one of the pitchers that truly have struggled since the June 21st, you know, sticky-a-thon or whatever we want to call it, you know, grip gate. He, for very obvious reasons, he really lost a ton of spin. Not some of these other hitters like Darvish or Musgrove, who just happened to, he didn't even lose spin, Musgrove. He just performed poorly at the wrong time. I mean, Rich Hill, I think it's pretty obvious that he dropped off very specifically because he was using probably some sort of grip enhancer and he needed to adjust, and he hasn't been quite the same. But he has been serviceable since coming over to the Mets. This was obviously one of his better starts for them against 0 earned, 6 innings. Usually he gets to the fifth and has that one kind of a blow up here. Would you trust him going forward as a pretty strong streamer? He's going against Miami next. You know, he can give you a blow up here or there. He's not striking out as many as he used to, but I think he's maybe getting a little too discounted, maybe overlooked by people looking for a quality streamer. And I still think that he's not going to give you the top end results, but I feel pretty good about him going through the end, as, you know, pick your spots.
Yeah, I think, yeah, you definitely want to pick your spots. Like, I don't want to throw him like in Atlanta, or even maybe in Philadelphia, but pretty much at home. You know, if he's playing at home, it's a good pitcher's park. Playing against Miami, playing against Washington, you know, if you're picking on some bad teams, kind of a team streamer, as we like to say. Like, he's a guy that you probably want to just keep on your team, but you're not going to start every time out.
Austin Gomber, we're going to have to talk about a few injuries almost in a row here. Austin Gomber, the centerpiece of the Nolan Arenado trade, he actually did pretty well. He pitched okay, and then like the third start of the season, I think he got torched by your Giants, like hardcore, and then they invented a verb for it being gombered. He, for his rookie year in Colorado, he actually was okay. You can't take out bad starts, but I mean, if I want to go bloom board on everybody here, if you isolate like two starts out of his season, he was actually rather impressive. He goes down here for the year with some kind of like a lower spine stress fracture thing. I mean, I know it had some kind of like name I can't pronounce for the technical term, but it's basically a lower back injury. I don't know if he's going to be ready for the start of next year. The news coming out on Sunday made it seem like it's not as bad, I guess, as the definition made it seem. But what are your thoughts on Austin Gomber in general? Because there's always that stigma of being a pitcher in Colorado. I don't know if you had any shares of him, if you got to ride the Austin Gomber roller coaster this season.
I got a few early shares of Austin Gomber before he was traded in some deep DC. Because I really liked him in St. Louis, and I was like, I think this guy's going to turn into a pretty usable pitcher. You know, I don't think he's going to be a star or anything, but like I thought he could be a really usable pitcher. But then you get traded to Colorado, and not only are you in Colorado, you're going up against the Giants and the Dodgers and the Padres on a regular basis. I mean, that really just hurts your value right there. I mean, you know, and then you have to pitch in Coors, which just sucks. So, yeah, I think he's a spot starter if he's healthy. If he's healthy coming in, he'll be a guy that, you know, maybe I pick up in some, like, really, like, deep drafting holds, maybe best ball kind of late, because he'll be really, really cheap because he's a Colorado pitcher. Especially best ball, where you can just take the good stuff and you kind of wash away the bad stuff. That's kind of the spot to be looking to use him.
You know what they always say, the hangover with Coors? It's not necessarily that. It's more with hitters where they say it's not that they're better at Coors and much worse on the road, that, you know, the more games a hitter is away, like every single day a hitter is away from Coors, they get back to normal. Austin Gomber had a 2.09 ERA this year at home with a 0.95 whip and a 1.87 average against. He was actually phenomenal at home. He had a 6.22 ERA on the road. So he was like kind of weird. So I don't know. I'll be keeping an eye on him.
That's what John Gray had too. And I'm remembering correctly, I think Marquez has a similar split this year. Mm-hmm. And what that is so, you know, your pitches move, especially breaking stuff, right? It moves differently in the thin air at Coors. And so what happens is they leave that thin air. They've gotten used to it. They know how to throw the ball there, and they leave that. And then they're overthrowing. And so it leads to more walks. It leads to, you know, poor in zone command, which leads to home runs. And so, like, if they could just stay one place, right? This is why John Gray, like, is okay with re-signing, and why the reason why the Rockies didn't trade him is because he knows how to pitch in Coors. And I think guys can do that and kind of figure out Coors a little bit, but it's hard to go back and forth between the two.
They need a 10-man rotation. Just leave five guys at Colorado. They never leave, ever.
Hire this man. Hire this man. They're looking for a new GM, right?
I don't know if I want to work there. It seems like a scary, scary place. Heading over to hitters, we're going to stick with injuries, unfortunately. AJ Pollock, I got to say, I had no shares this year, which, again, I'm a baseball analyst, so I should really, like, have a pulse on most players. But AJ Pollock, I had no shares, and I just didn't really dig into him. So I know how talented he is, and I obviously know his history with injuries. But when I dug in after he got injured just now, which, again, everyone, is a grade 2 hamstring strain, which is unfortunate. Dave Roberts said it's probably going to be over the 10 days, 2-3 weeks minimum. He could be done for the year, but the Dodgers certainly need him back. So this isn't a situation where, like, Willy Adames got injured. We'll talk about that in a second. Milwaukee's so far ahead, they could, you know, they should just handle him with kid gloves. Pollock was batting 297, 353 on base, 508 slugging over 354 at bats with 16 home runs, 25 doubles, and 9 stolen bases. Like, that's like peak Pollock. I mean, if you extrapolate that over a full season, I just didn't realize how just good he is. That's just a major loss for the Dodgers and for fantasy. Do you have any Pollock stacked up on your rosters this year, Justin?
I had Pollock in some best balls just because I originally thought the DH was coming in the National League. And I was like, if they can just keep him healthy and let him DH a bunch, like, he's going to be pretty good, right? Like, it's not a league winner, but a glue guy for your team, right? And that's what he's been, right? 297, 16 home runs, and 9 stolen bases. Like, that's a pretty darn good glue guy. Like, that's what peak Melky Cabrera, right? I'll take that, you know, as my 4th or 5th outfielder. The problem is, like, when he has to play the field, like, he's put in these positions where he gets hurt. And this one didn't happen in the field. It happened. It was like the world's most awkward slide into third base.
The world's most awkward slide is Brandon Nimmo. We'll talk about him next. Yeah. Both got injured, but yeah, no, continue on.
But yeah, I think Pollock is one of those guys too. Again, I think he's going to be discounted because he got injured again coming in next year. And I think the hope is that with the new CBA, as long as they get it done, that'll include a DH in the National League. Which should give him an opportunity to play more. He won't be sat quite as much. He won't have to be replaced defensively in games. So he'll get more plate appearances, which means he could easily replicate what he did this year. Maybe the average comes down quite a bit. Like, I think he's more probably the 260 guy nowadays. But, like, a guy who can hit 18, 19 home runs and steal double-digit bases, like, I'll take that on my team.
Yeah, absolutely. I knew how good he was. I didn't realize how good he was doing this season. Just, it's crazy. Brandon Nimmo, he just said he's out. He has his own history of injuries, and it's not that it's recurring. Again, I don't like to throw around the term injury prone. I know there are just some players that, for whatever reason, they get hurt. Like Rich Harden, everyone remembers him. I'm sure hopefully, if you don't, look it up. He was good. Some player. It's not like the same injuries. It's just players continue to get injured. Nimmo, he went into third base and he just slid over the top like a, you know, that's, they're trying to change the texture of the base. He like slid over like slick, just shick right over the top, and he hurt his hamstring. He seems in good spirits, but And he said, I think I'll be back this season. I'm like, well, I don't want to hear that because that means people are telling you you may not be. But again, this is a huge loss for the Mets. Batting 302, but more importantly, the 420 on base. I think I saw a stat since Brandon Nimmo came into the league. There's only two hitters with a higher on base percentage that are qualified, and that's Mike Trout and Juan Soto. So, I mean, in on base percentage leagues, he's literally like a superstar. So, again, there's someone that, you know, you can't really, you know, I don't know how you, there's not too many totally quality people in on base percentage leagues. So if you have him in that league, you can't really do much to replace Brandon Nimmo. But again, just another unfortunate mishap there. I don't know if you have anything to add. I mean, because
I love Brandon Nimmo. Like, yeah. I have Brandon Nimmo everywhere this year. And like, he just was one of those guys, like, not very much power. I was a bit surprised we didn't get really more than 5 home runs, but he also wasn't playing a ton of games. He's been nicked up a lot this year, you know, hasn't been playing, every game. He platoons a little bit, but I mean, just kind of, again, one of these like fifth outfielders that doesn't disappoint you, and like getting all that batting average or on base in your OBP leagues is just, it's just so nice. So yeah, it's a bummer. I don't think he's ever going to like break out into the player I thought he was going to be.
It's unfortunate because early in his career, I mean, he's not a 302 hitter. Maybe he is, but he looked like he was going to be more like 265, 270. But I thought there was room for, in a full season, 15 home runs, 15 stolen bases. I think he has that in him. But yeah, I don't think he'll ever be healthy enough to ever put it all together. He's like the Travis d'Arnaud of outfielders. But d'Arnaud, we saw what happened when he put it together, at least in a fake full season.
Well, I mean, like, he's played 77 games this year, 5 home runs, 5 stolen bases, 42 runs scored, 302 average, like double that, and that's a full season. You're like, okay, 10-10, but 90 runs and, you know, a good batting average and a great on-base percentage. Like, that's what I was hoping we were going to get from Brandon Nimmo, and that's just not going to happen.
Yep. But hey, you know, you're injury prone until you're not. Just ask Jorge Soler, who injury, and then he played 162 games.
Yeah.
So we'll see next year for Brandon Nimmo. Charlie Blackmon is not dead. He had home runs in 3 straight, which Mets fans, thank you. Charlie Blackmon single-handedly taking down the Braves. He's batting 271, 349, 420 with 13 home runs and 71 RBIs. He's not the player he used to be. It's not like he was being completely disrespected in leagues, but there were some people that thought he was like a great value. If you took him this year where he was going, around that Nelson Cruz area, I think even a little before, but I think that's the vicinity. Are you happy with the 271, 1371?
No.
Yeah, it wouldn't be.
I mean, I have him in both my main event teams. And for those who don't know what a main event team is, it's a $1,700 league. And yeah, he's like my outfielder number 2 or 3 in both of my main event leagues. And I'm super disappointed, because you thought you were going to get 300 and you thought you were going to get 30 home runs. Like, you knew the speed was gone. This hadn't been part of his game for a little while, but you thought you were going to get a boatload of runs. You thought you were going to get 30 home runs. You thought you were going to get 300 batting average. And, unfortunately, I think the batting average will come back next year. I do not think that the power will. Like, I think that we're probably looking at a guy that's more of a 20 home run hitter. So 20 home run, like good David Peralta, maybe, like, you know,
that's probably good. That's probably a perfect comp,
which is fine. It's totally fine, but you're on a bad team. So how many runs are you going to really get? You know, this team is, you know, isn't going to get any better. They're letting Story walk in free agency. You know, they refuse to play any of their good young players. And yeah, he's just going to kind of age out there by himself with that gray long beard. So yeah, I think he probably deserves to go outside the top 200. I don't know that he will, though.
Yeah, I remember, I mean, in the 2020 season, he didn't end well, which I think maybe had to put the sour taste in people's mouth, but I think people forget he was pushing for 400, which again, fake 400, because it was only a little bit, but people really thought he was going to make a run at 400 last year.
Yeah.
So yeah, we'll see. I get the feeling I'll have him on a lot of teams next year because I think there's probably a free fall coming, and I like to, you know, cherry pick some guys. Although I usually like to, if I'm getting cheaper hitters, I usually like to get some that can at least chip in a couple of steals, which we said those are gone, but let's move over to some catchers. Salvador Perez, who Someone made a, I can't remember, Spader. He said that he was Mike Piazza and Mike Piazza's offense with Yadier Molina's defense the other day. And I basically commented that I think Piazza hit 308 for his career, and I think Salvador Perez has like a 303 on base percentage for his career. But two more home runs on Saturday, one more on Sunday. He's up to 41. He's like four shy of the all-time catcher record, like which is Johnny Bench. 20 home runs since the All-Star break, which leads all the majors. Has 41 now, right? Oh no, is he? Yeah, 41 home runs now. I mean, wow. I know everyone like JT Realmuto for the number one catcher because he's usually very consistent and he steals some bases, which that's the big thing. But Salvador Perez never misses games. After that 1 year being out, people wanted to label him as an injury risk where it was an isolated incident, and his value comes from being able to be in there every day. Like right now, he's a neck contusion. He goes out there on Saturday with a neck contusion. Instead of being scratched, he goes to the DH, hits two home runs. How do you value Salvador Perez next year? Is he someone where you think that this kind of selling out for power, a la Joey Votto, do you think this is something as someone who can move over to the DH? Is he your number one catcher? Not necessarily you're going to draft him. Maybe you're against drafting catchers that early, but do you think he deserves that with his ability to get that many at bats?
I think you can make the argument. The question becomes, how many more plate appearances do we give Realmuto with a DH next year? And so I think that becomes kind of part of the question. Mm-hmm. But Realmuto hasn't been great this year either. So, I mean,
yeah,
I think you can make the argument for Sal Perez. I just don't understand why pitchers even throw to him. Like, he has, I think, a 3.8% walk rate this year. He doubled it from last year in his 1.9% walk rate. I mean, the dude does not walk. He's like, I just want to jog around the bases. That's all I want to do.
He comes up with that smile on his face. Maybe he just can't fool anyone into being intimidating. Like, oh, this guy's fine. He doesn't walk up there with that mean, like, intimidating scowl like Juan Soto staring you down.
I mean, he's got a 45% O swing percentage.
Yeah.
Like, just throw it out of the zone. Like, why? I don't understand.
What is it, really? 45?
Yeah, no joke.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize it was that bad.
Yeah, like, no joke. I mean, that's not that hot, much higher than his career 41.4% O swing percentage. Hmm. He just does, you throw it out of the zone, I hit out of the zone. Like, that's like, that was an awful accent. Like, that was more Russian than anything else. But, he's a monster. Like, he probably deserves to be the number one catcher next year. I don't think I'll be taking a catcher as high as he will be going. I mean, he went around like the top 75 this year. So I have to imagine he's going to move in two catcher leagues, especially he's going to move up into like that top 50. I don't like taking catchers that point, especially, I mean, I don't even know how old he is. He's got to be in his, you know, mid 30s or something like that by now. Oh, only 31. Okay. That's not he's not as old as I thought. But yeah, I'm not taking a 32-year-old catcher in the top 50.
Yeah. I'd be hard pressed to it. I am impressed with his ability to constantly play. The thing where, like, the neck contusion with him playing and he gets not scratched and he talks his way into the lineup and it's two home runs. I don't know. That's cool to me, especially for a team that doesn't need to win at all. But yeah, I'll talk myself out of it because I don't like taking early catchers. But
he's going to have 600 plate appearances as a catcher. That's it. It's huge. I mean, I haven't run the numbers on it, but I bet you he's pretty close to a top 10 hitter in two catcher formats.
Here's the reason why people don't like to take catchers early, because of guys like the next hitter, Eric Haas, who's 28-year-old rookie, has his 20th home run. It's not 41, but again, Eric Haas was not drafted anywhere. If you're savvy enough to pick him up, which a lot of people were, you know, he showed the ability to do this early. He's not going to hit you for a batting average. It's one thing. A lot of these power catchers come with the caveat that they only offer power. Do you, I mean, 28-year-old rookie, he just needed an opportunity maybe. Do you think that next year he'll be a viable option, or do you think we're just looking at this Cinderella season of sorts? Because it's not like insane, low average, high power, it's done. But again, 28-year-old rookie, it's kind of they're rebuilding in Detroit. Like, are they going to give him the at-bats required, et cetera, et cetera? It's like he kind of needs a formula to be valuable.
I think he'll have some value next year. I think he'll be an interesting guy because they let him play other positions. Like, he's super athletic. Like, he plays he's kind of their super utility guy. And while that really doesn't have a ton of value in fantasy because you just want him to catch for you, it means he's going to get extra plate appearances the same way like Aaron Nola did a couple years ago that made him insanely valuable at catcher. I don't know that he's going to be a catcher one, but I think he's going to be a pretty high catcher two.
Fair enough. I want to say, I was going to call this guy the most undervalued or underrated player in fantasy. And he might be the most underrated player because of what he did last year. Because if you look at, especially someone like me with like geek with metrics, the writing was on the wall for this guy making major improvements last year. And I'm talking about Kyle Seager. He beat his brother out in a lot of power metrics. And we saw that what he did was pretty somewhat legitimate and everyone kind of wrote it off. And here he is again, batting .214, but 33 home runs, 91 RBIs. I mean, he's got to be like fifth, sixth in all the majors in home runs, tied with probably a bunch of other people. Hit a pair of 3-run home runs on Saturday. I mean, at his age, I think it'll be another thing where people are betting against him next year, but I don't think you should. I mean, he's basically Eugenio Suarez right now.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be interested to see where he ends up because he is going to be a free agent. He's got a club option, but it's at like $18 million or something like that. They're not picking it up.
Which that I didn't realize. I kept thinking, oh, why aren't they trading him? Apparently, that would have opted automatically if he were traded.
Yeah, so yeah, he had this clause in his contract because I mean, Jerry DePoto is the general manager there, so he's like, well, I'm going to get traded if I don't get some sort of clause. So the clause in the contract was if he got traded, he automatically triggered his – actually, I want to say it's like a $20 million option or something like that for next season. Nobody was taking that on. So it depends on where he ends up. But, I mean, no matter where he goes, it's going to be a better park. So that's a pretty good spot for Kyle Seager because he's going to find an everyday job somewhere after hitting 33 home runs. At least I would think he would.
Watch him land somewhere like Philly. You know, I mean, there's always teams like that looking like, because, you know, I don't know what's happened with Alec Bond and Rhys Hoskins, though that's probably their 1-3. I just threw a team out randomly. But, yeah, I mean, there's not too many worse places he could land.
Watch him end up in Colorado to block someone there. I mean, that feels like so CJ Cron-ish that, like, they could definitely, you know, put in a 30-something-year-old Kyle Seager at third base and just block off a little bit more of the future.
Hey, so Ian Desmond retired. Someone's got to take up the mantle.
Well, Ian Desmond back next year. Collect the rest of that contract.
All right, we're going to end the show by talking about Frank Schwindel, who's like a mythical creature at this point. Chicago, as much as they're a team that everyone definitely wants to stack against, like as far as like throwing their pitchers against them, they have a whole bunch of incredibly intriguing hitters for fantasy. You know, they have Schwindel, Ian Happ is woken up. They have, Ortega. It's not that anyone's great. It's just they've individual players that everyone's trying to hope to get something out
of. Matt Duffy and his grand slam and another home run today. I mean, they're fielding a quad A team and somehow like these guys are hitting.
Schwindel 3-for-5 Saturday with his 10th home run, 3-for-4 Sunday with a grand slam, one of three hitting the game for his 11th home run, 29 years old. He's hitting .357 with a .403 on base, .678. Again, 11 home runs since the All-Star break. I know a bunch of Cubs fans are like, Anthony Rizzo who? And they're putting up the two things. Like, why are we going to re-sign Rizzo when we have Frank Schwindel here? But anyway, home runs in his 7 of his last 8 games. If this happened in April, I'd be screaming Shane Spencer. I do watch him. And I don't know if it is because he, I don't want to like insult the man. He doesn't look, you know, he has an interesting look for a hitter. He like, I don't know if it's the gangly. I don't know if that's the word. Loose running. I mean, I'm failing to come up with an adjective. He just doesn't look the kind of hitter that is putting up this kind of production. And I think maybe that's a very flawed bias on my part. because you look at Pete Alonso, he looks like he should be like, you know, your bartender, you know, in your local, in a, you know, your local establishment. So I mean, Frank Schwindel, are you buying into what you're seeing even a little bit long term, I should say?
A little bit. I mean, I don't know that he's going to be able to do this like in the next season. Like, I don't think he's going to be a guy, unless he's like penciled in as like an everyday player for some reason next year. But I don't know that. Man, maybe Chicago does. I don't know what Chicago's doing. I don't think they know what they're doing half the time. But I mean, he's got like decent underlying metrics. Swings outside of the zone a little bit too much, but he's making a fair amount of, or you know, good amount of in zone contact, almost 90%. Like, I can't see why he can't kind of keep this going. And Wrigley's a good place to hit in the summertime. So, like, it's I think he can keep it going rest of the way. And then we'll really evaluate coming into next year. But, you know, I mean, who else are they going to play?
That may come down to it. I mean, it's all, yeah, it's obviously all about at-bats. And, I mean, I'm pulling him up on Twitter right now to try to come up with another thing. Because, again, he's doing great. And I don't mean to be – I mean, he the best thing is he looks like Craig Counsell, like a really tall Craig Counsell. Like Chris Young and Craig Counsell were brothers, and you needed a third brother to kind of tie them together. It's Frank Schwindel. But, hey, you know, I hope to see more of it. Me and you were talking before the show where you said you benched him this week. And yeah. I have him on a couple of my teams, and I cannot find a way to force him into my lineup. So I don't know. Maybe I'll go out of my way. So, Frank, don't let me down this week. I'm going to try to force you in.
This will be the week he just completely craps the bet because, like, I had him on my bench this week. He goes out and just balls out. I'm going to put him in my lineup this week, and he's just going to completely disappoint me. So I apologize to everyone who picks him up and plays him because it'll be my fault.
All right. Well, at least they can't blame me now. Justin, is there any final like advice? Cause man, I mean, half the teams have tuned out, you know, I mean, after the All-Star break, half the leagues are like, all right, I'm screwed onto football. But for everyone that is like really grinding it out, do you have any advice from your own experience as far as like how to handle fab or just maybe dumping high value draft picks that just aren't producing? Is there anything that you believe in that you think that might help the audience out in their home stretch trying to win a championship? Because it's kind of go time right now.
Yeah, I think really staying vigilant right now. I think often people think, oh, it's the end of the season. Especially in Roto League, we've compiled all these stats. Things aren't going to move very much. That's not necessarily true. And like you said, a lot of people, now the football is back, are going to completely tune out. Like, and I don't care if you're in a free league versus a $1,700 league like the main event. Like, there will be people who completely tune out, and you can take advantage. Don't ignore ratios. If you're hunting for wins, you're hunting for strikeouts because those are, you know, categories. Don't hurt yourself too much by going after bad pitchers. I think often we go, oh, those ratios aren't going to move. Ratios move a lot more than you think at the end of the season, and are actually a great way for you to lose a league instead of win a league because you're attacking bad pitchers or pitchers in bad spots. So
be a little bit,
yeah, exactly. Be a little bit more cautious than a lot of people often are with kind of those starting pitchers at the end of the season. This is why I like to bank a lot of streaming starts at the beginning of the season so I can be a little bit more conservative at the end.
Yeah, fantastic advice. It's something that everyone is going to be reminded of. I mean, be as extreme as you are in the very first week where you're meticulously looking. That's how you should try to be at the end here because, you know, you never know the little thing here or there. Maximize at bats, maximize innings pitched, and don't be a fool. You know, it's fantastic.
Absolutely.
I plugged all of your fabulous work in the beginning, but remind everyone where they can chase you down, where they can find all of your work because you're everywhere. But let everyone know where they should be subscribing, where they should be hitting the follow button.
Yeah, I mean, follow me on Twitter at Justin Mason FWFB. You can also friend me on Facebook or find me on TikTok or find me on Instagram. All those.
Hold on, you're on TikTok? What do you do on TikTok?
I do absolutely nothing. I have posted one video of me getting out of the pool in my Justin Mason onesie or not. It's not a onesie, one piece women's bathing suit. But I actually am planning for the off season and next season to do some stuff on TikTok, fantasy baseball related stuff. So, but I definitely, it's probably not going to happen this season. So if you want to get ahead of the curve and follow me now, you can. But yeah, the Friends of Fantasy Benefits baseball podcast, rolling strong. Me and Dave McDonald are going to be finishing out the year together from, if you know him from Rotosaurus or the High Stakes Heat podcast, he's going to come over and do some stuff with me.
I got a question. I can remind you later, but I'm going to have it on record. Maybe Dave listens to my shows. Ask him how he's going to survive next year when his whole claim to fame this year was hanging his hat on Dylan Moore and Zach Plesac. How you going to come back from that, Dave? I love Dave. You know,
we're definitely going to do an episode after the season ends on taking L's because he's really good at taking victory laps. I'm very good at taking victory laps, Cedric Mullins. But you also have to be really good at taking L's, and we all have our L's to take. But Plesac and Dylan Moore are going to be some pretty big L's he's going to have to take, and I will hold his feet to the fire on those. You can also find me on Sleeper on the Bus podcast, which is a Fangraphs podcast, and then on the TGFBI podcast, which is my own thing. So, and then I write daily over at Fangraphs as well. So,
you can trip and fall, and you can land on Justin Mason if you're on Twitter. Yeah. It's pretty great.
Absolutely.
Everyone, if you want to make sure to follow the NBC Circling the Bases podcast, we're here 5 days a week. I know the off season coming, but like we said, you want to grind out all those things 5 days a week. Make sure to hit the subscribe button. If you want to follow me on Twitter, my DMs are always open. If you want to talk about baseball, MATTWI77IMS. We'll be back next week with the weekend recap. See everybody.